Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good. And you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, we have got the amazing and talented Char Molina. I spent a number of years laying down the drums for this particular person and fighting about all kinds of things. And we don't really get into that much because there's a much bigger story than the sliver that I fit into. And I think you're really going to resonate with it. It's a good one. And as a matter of fact, as luck would have it, we were also able to throw together a quick little acoustic version of a song that we wrote together a few years ago. And it's at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for the song. I always love it when there's music on this thing. There's not enough of it. I'm looking at you, bands. Why don't you talk to me anymore? What did I do? Well, whatever it is, talk to me about it. We'll get there. Well, I think that's probably enough of this ridiculousness. Before I say something absolutely ridiculous, I said ridiculous. You see what I mean? This is what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with this version of myself. I kind of like it. Kind of scatterbrained, a little all over the place, but starting to feel like me again. I guess that's just who I am. And I'll learn to like it. And I hope you do too. Now let's all learn to like Char Molina. So, like everything else, how it always starts. Hi.
Hello. How's it going? How are you?
I'm good. I'm kind of bouncing back from sort of a strange kind of listlessness that came from dropping the meds. And everybody who listens is bored of this already. Mm-hmm. But it's been sort of a strange process because... for the past year, I've been a medicated person for the first time in, 15 years. And now I'm back to this guy. And this guy is twitchy and an insomniac and the
drinking
roller coaster.
Decaf.
Yeah, and drinking decaf. Yeah, because I can't sleep at night. And, I got shit to do. I can't not sleep.
Right.
So it's been a little weird.
Adjustments.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
To say the least, anyways.
Well, what about you?
Oh, man, same. It's been one hell of a year. It's as we're nearing the end, I am more and more of that cliche. That's, fuck 2019 and 2020, new year, new me. Who's this? Like,
yeah.
And I really don't mean to be that way, but I think that it's just so accurate to say those things for me this time around.
Yeah.
And the more that I speak about this being a hard year for me, it seems like it just had been for many others too. And we could say this for every year. So it's not necessarily the end of a year and the fresh new start and to fit that cliche, but
love cycles.
Right.
Yeah.
I just feel like for at least, a handful of the people that I've been closely conversing with, the end of 2018 was harsh, and then it just kind of kept going, and then all of a sudden we were in the middle of this year, and
yeah.
It was like, what the hell happened? So if you want to phrase hardships by a, duration of time, then this one's been tough.
Well, we can compare battle scars in a minute, but let's do this. Take me back a little farther than that. Where were you born?
Bay City, Michigan.
Yeah?
Yeah, born and raised there. Well, actually, no. Okay, so let's see. I was born in Flint. I was conceived in New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm everywhere. I've been traveling since before I could travel, but... yeah, I grew up in Bay City my whole life and lived there up until about 2 years ago when I moved out here to Denver. So
that's a pretty big move, though.
It was. It was supposed to happen long before that. But
well, what held you up? Let's go back even further. Like let's stay in Bay City for a minute before mm-hmm. we get there. What was little Char like?
Oh my God, she was really snotty, but definitely. Aspiring to entertain, always. Ever since I was a little girl, I would always set up my hundreds of stuffed animals on my bed and, you know, sing into my hairbrush and put on concerts for either my stuffed animals or my family. And I was really into Star Search then. Really wanted to be on Star Search. And,
yes!
And also the Apollo a little bit, too. I was also really into both of those things. And so I would have little fake Star Search performances in my living room. And
How old were you when you were doing that?
Well, I started singing You Are My Sunshine when I was 3. That was my big one. That was my big breakthrough.
That's a big hit.
Yes, it was a hit. And I was very horrible at the lyrics, but I sang the hell out of them. And I have video, if anyone's interested. And then from there, it was, just elementary music class and started singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow when I was in about 3rd grade. And that was my first actual solo performance.
And that one's
8.
A lot more technically proficient.
That was actually on a microphone, on a stage in front of people. And that was kind of how people really found out that I could do something like that. And
Was it just natural ability or did you get it from somewhere?
As I grew older, I realized or was told that there was more of a musical background in my family than I realized. But I did grow up in an incredibly awesome Polish family that had harmonicas, guitars, and accordions and concertinas and all that kind of stuff on holidays. And we would polka and my grandpa and my uncle would just jam, you know. So it wasn't until I was much older where – what I knew what jamming was. It was just, that's just what happened when we ate pie after dinner, you know? So it was, I've always had some sort of a music environment always.
You got a brother and a sister too, right?
Yes. Yes. And my sister, I think she was probably one of the first idols that I've ever had in music. She was in choir and I would see her and her girlfriends come over after school and practice their choreography and their songs and their harmonies. And I just wanted to do everything that my sister wanted to do.
Yeah.
My brother was more sports, but he really loved Michael Jackson. And naturally, I'm Janet. So we would Michael and Janet, you know, in our bedrooms all the time. So, I mean, there's always been some form of me, I guess, performing in a sense. The only thing that was upsetting about that is if you didn't clap. That was a big no-no for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, always some form of that. Music's always been a nice little escape for me. I mean, MTV was my babysitter, 100%.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. Anytime I hear a song that I like, I have a perfect visual of what they call music videos.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you heard of those this? Old...
Yeah. I think they call it YouTube now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it was all right for me.
But what was life like? I mean, it was you, your mom, your brother, your sister,
mm-hmm.
And then you had a stepdad, right?
I had a couple, actually.
Okay.
But the one that was, you know, that is the closest to me would be my Daddy D. Mm-hmm. And I think I was maybe around 9 or 10 when my mom had started dating him. And he had a simple conversation with me one night. He just really took on to all 3 of us kids.
Yeah.
He loved my mom with everything, and he just really connected with us, and he made a point to have a relationship with us. And, you know, as a single mom, that was kind of a cool thing to see. It wasn't – she didn't ask him to do that, you know.
Yeah.
He just cared. And he had a conversation with me one night listening to the radio in the car, and he said, "So where's your dad at?" I said, "I don't know. I've never seen him. I've never met him." And he goes, "Well, that's okay. You call me Daddy D." And from that point on, he just was. Him and my mom split, and he wanted to have children, and her tubes were long gone. So he did. He had a little girl, and eventually he passed. But we even even to his closer family that we never met, they knew us as his Bay City kids. We always
were. Nice.
So yeah, there were a couple of rotating people, I guess. But that's the one that mattered to me, really. Nice. The closest one. And yeah, it was a you know, my mom worked really hard. So we were all kind of, my sister was grown, so she was kind of gone. And, you know, me and my brother were close enough in age and at that age where we totally hated each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was kind of on my own a little bit. Mom was taking care of us and working third shift. So I just really latched on to my social life and my friends. I've always been really, really, really into that. So much that for quite some time, my family were my friends and I was like not really paying attention to my own family at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rave scene will do that, I guess.
Is the rave scene where things started to go sideways for you?
No. No.
Because here's the thing. I know you.
Yeah.
And I know that at some point, the anger came out and the claws came out and there was punching and there was screaming mm-hmm. and there was kicking of everyone.
Yeah. So that started actually much, much earlier.
So take me back to
when
that.
I got mad.
Yeah.
When did you get angry?
When did you discover that you couldn't handle it?
Well, I think, you know, initially with, as I had said, you know, my family being a little separated, although at that time we all lived together.
Yeah.
I kind of felt like a little bit of a loner, you know, like I felt like I wasn't really getting much attention or whatever justified that. And I loved school at the time, from kindergarten to fourth grade. Then the summer between fourth to fifth grade, they closed down my elementary school and I had to go to a new one for my fifth grade year. And I was pissed. I was pissed. That's when I got mad. And I felt
you were
like
8, 9 years old?
Yeah, between fourth and fifth grade. I really liked my school. And I mean, I've always had an attitude. So, you know, that wasn't me being mad about stuff. It's just, that's just me, I guess. But, or acting out, you know. But it was then that I decided in my head, you know, if you didn't go to Bangor North, then I'm not talking to you and I'm not your friend. And like, anyone at Bangor West, like all just sucks. And that's how I came into school, just angry. And I was really upset about it. And I,
like Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, just war.
Oh, it was. I came in and it was war. It was, you know, either you were the people I knew since kindergarten or you just don't exist to me and I hate you.
Really?
Yeah, that quickly. And I think also, you know, maybe in some way that would tie into just kind of feeling estranged at home, because then I felt like whatever I had that was connected to me was being removed. And so it was a little bit more of, yeah, it turns out as an adult, I look back and realize I have some huge issues with separation anxiety. So, yeah, that's when I kind of started acting out and, you know, getting detention or having counselors, you know, have to meet with me or getting kicked out of class or things like that. I've never been, like, kicked out of school and I like, skip school. But because I knew my mom would whoop me. So yeah, we didn't play that game. But I would act up in school.
Yeah.
Just do it right here. So, you know, that progressed into middle school where, you know, start learning about grunge music and Marilyn Manson and things like that. And, you know, wearing my Stussy shirts and combat boots and shaved half my head. And,
right.
You know, so then I actually wasn't allowed to go to class. Everything was just directed straight to the detention room. That's where I was supposed to go. But at the same time, I started to get into an actual choir. So although this is, you know, this angsty person with these issues and reasons to feel upset or segregated, somehow music has always been something that'll kind of level me out.
Yeah.
And I think what kind of fueled me being a quote bad kid, more just like an angry kid, was that I wasn't at the same level of some of the other students as far as money goes and wealth.
Yeah.
And I feel like I was treated differently because of that.
For sure.
And therefore, I was a really, really good vocalist, but I didn't have the payment on time for the competition. So I, you know, I didn't get the solos. I didn't get the best spot on the risers or whatever because I was a little poor kid.
Yeah.
And my mom would raise hell about it too.
You gotta pay what do you play. Do?
Exactly. So, yeah, I butt heads with my choir director a lot. And so that just kind of, it became whole. Sometimes it became a game for me. I remember in middle school loving to see a substitute when I would walk in and I would think, okay, got it. I'm going to make you quit by the end of the hour. That was my goal, 100%.
Yeah.
And I was told often at that time, you know, being taken into counseling offices and having my mom come in, and she works third, so she's just already angry that she has to be awake anyways. And
yeah,
nobody's happy in this situation, and all I know is that I'm a problem. And being told that I'm not allowed to cry, that it was wrong to cry, that I was interrupting and I was disrupting the other students and, you know, stopping the process of education. And that really upset me. Being told that I wasn't allowed to cry just made me angry.
Yeah.
So I'm sad and I'm angry, but I'm not allowed to feel these things. And I feel like...
Right. And what do you do with all of that once it's unleashed?
You freak out. You just go even harder because I feel like now looking back, I understand I had to learn. It took a long time for me to learn what that really meant. And it was, you know, like time and place for everything kind of situation. Like you're in the middle of a room of people here. You can't just start screaming on the top of your lungs and crying.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. It's okay for you to feel that way, but we have to find a different way for you to feel it. You know, that would have been more understanding. But I was told you're not allowed to be upset. You're not allowed to be sad. You have to be sad. You have to be upset. You have to find something to do with those emotions. Otherwise, we start looking at being self-destructive and losing all self-esteem and taking things out on other people in the wrong way. And that's exactly what I did for a long time.
Well, like how?
Just, you know, throwing things or getting into yelling matches or knocking stuff over or punching stuff, kicking things, crying uncontrollably. Getting kicked out of class a lot and things like that. I mean, that's not really actually like the person that I was. I was just frustrated and trying to understand how to deal with being an incredibly emotional and depressed person at a very young age.
Yeah.
Because I don't think my mom knew how to handle that. And, you know, me and my brother didn't talk and my sister was grown. So I had to figure it out.
Well, people usually try to give you some kind of, you know, bumpers for your lanes to figure out, you know, how to get you to another place. And usually from adults, especially when you dial all of that aberrant behavior up to 11, their first reaction is just knock it off. Whatever it is you're doing, knock it off, because
you're
this is way too big.
To
I mean, they can deal with someone who's a little sad because of something normal, you know, normal. But like, you know, it's easier when kids are little and it's stimulus. It's like, you know, Billy took my car and now I'm going to cry. I mean, that's easy to deal with. But when it's like, I'm experiencing some inner listlessness and ennui, like, how do you deal with that from somebody who's 12 years old,
like
who's suddenly discovering that they've got some sort of really awful depression and nowhere to put it?
Yeah.
And then Marilyn Manson comes along and it's like, this guy's got some answers.
Right.
and it feels good. And that is actually constructive.
Right.
It's constructive to take that music and say, this allows me to express these feelings.
Exactly.
It's completely healthy. Yeah, it gives you a place to put it and to use them appropriately, like you said. And so you take all of that and you start deciding that you're going to figure this out on your own?
You know, I guess the most clear answer is one that's actually shocking to me and I'm figuring out right now, is that I didn't really understand ways to figure it out on my own until probably this year. And I'm actively...
So what were you doing? Like, to get through life, what were you doing?
You know, just, I guess, definitely listening to music, performing music. I mean, that's my doctor. That's my medicine. That's what's always kept me in a place where I knew what to do with my emotions there.
Yeah.
And even if they were angry ones or they were sad ones, it was a way for me to connect with someone else and stop feeling alone.
Yeah.
And that was always really important to me. But that true understanding didn't even come until after I graduated, when I started playing music really. So, you know, through choir, I was doing that. But I really, really leaned on my friends a lot and just, you know, hated being home. I always wanted to be, you know, at my friend Becky's house every single night of the week, which...
Were your friends as into music as you were?
Yeah, some. I mean, maybe not. A couple of my long-term friends were always in choir with me, but they just liked it and they liked performing and everything. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. So there's a difference with that. But I don't know. I just think that being social, being like a goofball or trying to, you know, misdirect my feelings towards things by laughing and making fun.
Yeah.
That always helps. You know, we all know that the funniest person you know is usually wearing the thickest mask.
Right.
So that's kind of part of it too for me. I tried, you know, getting into POMS, which I was really, really good at, and cheerleading, which I was really, really good at. But, you know, cheerleading made my choir director hate me even more because I was screaming all the time. So she really didn't like that. And then POMS really liked me, but my GPA wasn't high enough. And I couldn't afford to stay on the cheerleading team. So, you know, again, you know, dumb poor kid.
Right, yeah.
She knows how to sing. Like, it's, what do I do with these things, you know? So I guess I just kind of fumbled around through things. And I really wanted to be popular really bad. I really wanted to fit in. I wanted to be one of the cool kids. And a handful of my friends, you know, they were all pretty skinny white girls with soft straight hair that just looked nice the way they did, and their parents allowed them to wear makeup and boys liked them and they had nice good clothes, and I was not any of those things in any way. I was the dude, you know, I was the guy friend. I was like, you know, the buddy, and you know, but that's not who I really wanted to be inside, I guess. I mean, it's just who I am, but like, I wanted to be pretty too, you know, and
I get that completely.
There's like, a lot of, although I latched on to being social, there was a lot of resentment towards the people that were in my social group because I always felt like I was beneath them. And then even some of the closest people in said social groups saw that and made them feel better, so they would keep me beneath them, you know. And so there's a lot of struggles with identity and feeling important or feeling loved. And once again, it always comes back to music. And it was always, I could just hole up in my bedroom and just listen to cassette tapes over and over and over again and just lose myself in that. But, you know, as I found out that I couldn't afford the cheerleading and I wasn't smart enough to do POMS, I stuck with choir because it was free mostly.
Yeah.
And the summer between freshman year and sophomore year, I learned about techno music. And when I learned about techno music and making bracelets to trade with strangers that are now going to be your new friends, bright colored clothes, glitter, late night, random adventures, just goofy off the wall, zany people with funny nicknames. And most importantly, peace, love, unity, and respect. It just blew my mind.
Yeah.
I was totally floored by this whole new world that I was just now finding out existed. And no one in our hometown was really kind of doing that. So definitely parents had no idea what to think.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could just say, I'm going to a concert. And they go, okay.
Yeah, that they can wrap their head around.
I want to go see this DJ. Well, they don't realize that, you know, you're 15 and it's in some busted ghetto warehouse down in Detroit.
Right.
And you have no business being there. And, you know, you're doing a bunch of nitrous. Like... And that was my first rave.
You know, but all of the positive things that you just mentioned, it's weird to hear it explained that way.
That's exactly what it was. It was
because
amazing to me.
To me, that is the exact same conversation I would have with anybody about how I discovered punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same thing. It's becoming
it's a
part of a counterculture.
Right. It's a scene that has a whole thing that happens there that's driven by a sound that you didn't know existed and made you feel alive.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think most anybody could say that about any style of music, that when they first discovered it, you know, there's a whole world that's connected with each genre.
Yeah.
And you can really put yourself into that. And it's great because everybody else wants to be there too. And they're just happy that you're there with them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had this great summer where I learned about all of this and came back to school. Me and my two other friends that were into it, fat pants and candy bracelets up past both elbows and glitter all over our eyes. And we're like, we love everybody. And we're all excited. And then all the cheerleaders that, you know, invited me to their after football hangouts were like, ugh.
Right.
And they wanted nothing to do with me.
Exactly.
And so here we go with that anger again. Mm-hmm. It fueled me to hate preps is what, you know, is like stoners versus the preps. And like,
yeah, yeah.
And it fueled me
to
like.
A never-ending struggle.
Yeah. I actually kind of, you know, spoke about this last night. You know, a friend and I were talking about being bullied or what that means now.
Yeah.
As compared to what it really means. I don't mean to, but I feel like there's so much conversation about bullying and anti-bullying and being bullied and all of this. And maybe, I don't know, I think we're just a lot softer now, and I don't think it's the same. When I think about being bullied when I was younger, I had blood drawn, man, you know, yeah, and yeah. I'm not saying that doesn't exist now, but,
right.
you know, calling someone names on the internet was not a thing. There were five, six bigger people in your face calling you those names in your face and then touching you and pushing you, you know. That's a physical, real thing. I think it's just – my experience is just different from what I hear a lot, but
– yeah, it's physical mm-hmm. as opposed to psychological. Right. Although it is psychological as well. Yeah.
Very much, yeah. But, I mean, it's right in your face. I mean, the words that are being said to you come with saliva in your eyes, you know. So
yeah, yeah.
It's a little more tangible, I suppose. But, you know, after I had been – after my eyes had been opened to this electronic music scene and was just so excited to accept everybody
yeah.
and then was not accepted by the people that accepted me just a year before because I was fitting into their group.
Yeah.
It really angered me that people could be that way because, you know, you think you made these friends and these connections and then as soon as you want to be more of who you think that you are, they neglect you. And
yeah.
So that was a really tough battle for me. And I, you know, almost did like reverse bullying. The people that would pick on the underdogs, those are the ones that I wanted to bully.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I wanted to talk shit to.
Let's bully the bullies.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's like being a Nazi hunter.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, yeah. I think when it came to actual school throughout high school, I was real back and forth because I had made some actual friends on, you know, the cool side and then
yeah.
Just some regulars, you know, on the in-betweens, you know, here and then definitely the weirdos and like, you know, the drama kids and the artistic ones because I was always in choir and one act plays and things like that, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
So and some of those people were really popular. So, you know, just all of these little politics of high school kind of pushed me all over the place. And as I wound up saying a lot, oh, were you popular in high school? And I'd always say, everybody knew who I was, but a lot of them didn't like me.
Right.
And I was pretty okay with that because I started making a lot of friends that were not at school. They were not in school. They either went to another school or they were long since graduated. And those were the people that I was with every day. Those are the people that I spent all my time with, all my weekends with, going, doing all this rave stuff and learning about DJs and, you know, turntables and records and all the other fun stuff that comes along with it. But, you know, it was like school was just a place I had to go. And I needed to do what I had to do just enough so that I could get out of there on time.
Yeah.
And the only thing that mattered to me in school was choir. And then everything else was just really happening and bright and just buzzing with excitement outside of. So I got through high school by completely directing my attention to a totally different scene that made me feel really great and loved. And yeah, like I had a ton of friends all the time, you know. So was I popular? Yeah, but they didn't go to my school. You know?
Popular in your group.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
and then you didn't need those people anymore.
Well, you know, things happen when you live that kind of a lifestyle. I mean, it goes from having a good time to being a 100% addict or, you know, being locked away because, well, we were having fun that night and decided, wouldn't it be even more fun to steal a car? So, you know,
right,
things like
yeah.
that. And, you know, luckily me and my closest friends didn't make choices like that. There is a smart way to do stupid things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And we
completely.
Knew how to do that. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
My very best friend, I think, you know, came to baccalaureate graduating with honors and was completely just still up from the night before. Let's just say it that way. You know, and it's, I mean, you can still be successful, but, you know, once...
Calculated risks.
Yeah, exactly. And I look back on it. I'm like, why am I not dead? Like, it's kind of crazy. But then at the same time, I'm like, man, that was so great. It was so great. I had so much fun. I had such a good time. And, you know, it wasn't all rainbows and kittens, but...
Nothing is.
No, it's just... when I look back at that time in my life, I only think happy thoughts and have big smiles and just... Think of just dancing all the time. I mean, that's great, right? You know, like if you're having such a good time in your day that you have to pull over to get out of the car and just dance right there where you are.
Yes.
I've done that a lot. Me and my friends used to do that a lot. And, you know, I miss that. I mean, who's to say I can't do that? But I just feel like that's a really great thing to be able to experience in your life. Just unbridled joy and connected to music.
So what is joy?
Starts with a J.
I know that much.
People like to use it during Christmas. I don't know.
So tell me a little about the next thing. So you, because you leave high school,
mm-hmm.
And I imagine you're still finding ways to sing places and whatnot?
No.
No?
No, I was terrified because of that. Because I knew
you needed the choir.
Oh yeah, well, it was the only thing I had. That was the stage, and so I was approaching graduating high school.
Well,
I already
knew. When did
you
first start playing guitar? Because you play a little guitar.
That was also after high school.
Okay.
Yeah. So, throughout high school, I did a lot of choir competitions and shows and solo shows and whatever. But I mean, that I did a lot of performing on stages and some other stages, but mostly my high school stage. And I'm graduating. I can't play here anymore. You know, what am I going to do? I didn't, because everyone else.
You don't
want
to show up to the. What's up, guys?
I can't.
I was here last year.
I legitimately, my senior year, asked if I could come back for the talent show the next year. They told me no. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, what am I going to do? You know, everyone around me seemingly was planning what they're dual enrolled or they're going to this college or they got accepted here.
Right.
And I not for one moment thought of those things because I'm like, I don't need that. I'm going to be a professional singer.
Yeah.
Like, good luck, guys, with all of that money you're going to have. I'm going to go play. I'm going to, you know, just that's all I knew in my head was I was going to do it.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how. And so once school ended, I kind of freaked out a little bit. I was like, I don't have a way to play. What am I going to do?
Well, what did you do with yourself when that outlet was taken away? Did you go back to being kind of a fucker?
Well, like... I had a whole new world of things that got put in my lap that I had to direct my attention to first. So it didn't even seem like, you know, the performing thing was a possibility at the time anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I had to grow up the day I graduated. I had been living with, it was just me and my mom at the time, and she was going to move away to get married, which I was 18 years old. I was invited. It wasn't like I couldn't go.
Yeah.
But it was legitimately the day of my graduation. So it was like, okay, first summer of like 18-year-old freedom with your friends or follow your mom to some place in Oregon with a man you don't know so they can get married and like be all by yourself. And no, I didn't want to do that, you know? So the bills were transferred into my name and our home got gutted and I was left with a couple of plastic chairs, a really nice entertainment center, and my bedroom. And I was like, cool. So do you guys know how to pay bills? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I was freaked out and my car died and I lost my job that I had. And then my mom moved and I was your, you know, walking country song at 18.
Yeah.
I was like, shit, you know, what do? I lost the music thing. And then, you know, the way that most people, regardless of how connected you are to high school or not, the realization of not seeing the people you've seen every single day since kindergarten anymore is kind of weird. And so my mom was moving away and my brother was moving away and my sister was already gone. And it was just like everything was just dissipating and I was just left in this freaking apartment with nothing. And I didn't know what I was going to do at all, you know. And I had started hanging out with a couple of friends out in Pinconning. And my friend Brad I think this is how the guitar probably started. He had come over to hang out with me at my apartment because naturally that was like, okay, I have an apartment, guys. Let's party here.
Right.
So that's what we did.
Yeah.
Again, just dove into being very social. He had brought his guitar over. It was a black acoustic guitar. And I grabbed it. I've never touched a guitar in my life. I don't know, whatever. And I was just trying to make a sound out of it. I didn't know what I was doing or anything. And he looked at me and said, you know what? I'm going to leave that here. Why don't you just hang on to that for a little while? And I was like, all right, like whatever. Sure, you know, come get it whenever you want. I didn't really realize that he was like seeing that I should play with this.
Yeah.
You know, he like saw something when I was doing that or heard something and thought maybe I could benefit. I guess, I don't know, in hindsight, but
I mean, how weird would it be if he had brought a machete instead?
You know, I think I'm going to let you hang on to this for a while.
Let's see what you can do with it.
I would have done some things. I'm sure of that. It would not have gone to waste. This is actually one of my favorite stories, but I did start to mess around with it. I wrote a little song for my newt at the time, which I had for close to 15 years. He was a real trooper.
Wait, newts can live that long?
I guess. I don't know. The guy would not die.
How do you know it wasn't dead?
Because he was moving around and alive and I was feeding him. That's why.
Because he was
very much alive. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But
I'll allow it.
Like he was breathing? I don't know. Like. But yeah, he had left the guitar there, and I messed around on it a little bit and had some fun with it, and kind of just, I realized very quickly that naturally, I had a natural rhythm hand. I didn't have to think about that. It just kind of came. I mean, I'm a musical person, so
right.
It kind of made sense. I didn't know what to do with a fretting hand. I don't know, you know, what do you do with your fingers? Where do things go? And so I just kind of started asking Brad a little bit, you know, and I'm going to leave it here a little longer. Well, then my very best friend, Andy, had come over, and he was going to teach me how to restring a guitar because another friend, Pryor, had played it and broke a string on it.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I got to fix this before Brad comes back. And I didn't know what to do. I don't know how to string.
Right.
Yeah, so
do I have to buy a whole guitar?
Yeah, right. Exactly. I was freaking out because I'm like, he like trusted me with this. And what am I going to do?
Right.
Because I'm not even one that broke it, you know. So I'm panicking. And then my friend was going to teach me how to restring a guitar, and he took every string off, which, you know, you're supposed to do like one at a time.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, okay, cool. So then we just put the new ones on, right? Well, yeah, we got to get some. I'm like, well, where are those? You know, so there's a process. And needless to say, Brad came back and saw the guitar sitting there with no strings on it at all. And was like, I'm taking this, you know, he was very mad at me. I just really thought I messed up, you know? So that's how I started playing guitar. And then he ended up being my guitar player eventually in a band called Soundstream. But before that, I had a girl I had met when I was about 15, 16, my very first job working at Big Boy. I knew her for that short duration of time and then not anymore. Wouldn't see her or anything.
Yeah.
Somehow ran into her. I think it was maybe a Blue Oyster Cult concert in Bay City. And was like, hey, how have you been? I'm like, I'm great, you know, and let me get your phone number. And so then it was, I'm doing this thing. We're doing like some harmonies like in Saginaw. Do you want to come? I'm like, okay. Well, I'll pick you up tomorrow. Sure. You know, so I get picked up in a van by Jekyll and Mel and get brought to some house in Saginaw. And when I walk in, there's like a band in there and they're all looking at me and I'm like, what the fuck is this? I don't know. And they're all waiting and ready to start practice. Yeah. I didn't know you were going to do some harmonies. I was like, okay. Yeah. And hang out and sing with you. Sure. It was a band that was waiting to start rehearsal. And so, you know, I got like guided to my
wrong
microphone.
It was a cult.
And, right. Exactly. It turned out to be. And, started playing some songs and played me some recordings of some things. And
well, tell me about those recordings. When you first heard this music, what was your first thought? What did it sound like and what did you think of it?
I have no idea what this is. I don't get it. I've never listened to this kind of music. I don't know who any of these bands are that you're talking about. You guys, I'm 19. What is is this? Oh, it's like this concept, right? Like, you know, it's this thing, like it's a like a cartoon band come to life and blah, blah, blah. I'm just, I still just right over my head. I had no idea. I'm hearing these songs, Ooh La La and Who's Your Baby? And have you ever heard of the 1910 Fruit Gum Company? No, I don't. What? I have no idea. I've been listening to electronic DJs in Detroit for the last 5 years, way out of, you know, nothing like 1960s pop music. I just, I didn't get it, but I also thought it was funny. And I was also told it was supposed to be. So I was like, okay, like kind of feeling you now. Then was, you know, names like Andy Kaufman were getting dropped. And I was like, oh, okay. And then, you know, I got told about the old Jamestown shows and how it was purposely booked to mostly interrupt acts that we had no business being with. And I'm like, well, this kind of sounds fun, you know, but
like a bubblegum 60s band playing at a punk rock show, like, cheer up, kids. Let's dance.
And acting like you have no idea how bad you are.
Yeah.
So the whole concept and all of that kind of stuff, I mean, all of these terms and phrases and ideas were being thrown at me of things I'd never heard of. And there was definitely a lot of smile and nodding going on, because the one thing that I definitely did know was that I was standing in front of a microphone again and that I was getting an opportunity to perform again.
Right.
So it was, yeah, I can wear that. I can do that. Sure. Whatever you need. You know, I just wanted to go with it because it was music was coming to me.
Yeah.
So I didn't get it. I didn't identify with it. I didn't understand it. But I knew that it was music and I had nothing else happening. So I needed to just go for this, you know.
And so, while all of this is happening, and you're still living on your own, you've learned how to adult more or less.
Real quick, I did.
Right.
So I was trained by the best. I'll give my mom that. I mean, you know, I wasn't completely blind. But
yeah, I don't think your mom would have left you like, here, we're going to transfer this into your name.
No, like, no. Yeah, very much felt that way. But she also, like, every day would be like, okay, come here. I want to show you something. So when this happens in your car, this is what you need to do. And just, you know, she'd always was just trying to give me quick crash courses and things before she left, you know.
Right.
Because, I mean, I wasn't a child, you know.
Right, yeah.
So I definitely, yeah, she didn't, it wasn't done the way that it felt. The way that it felt was way bigger than how it actually all happened intently, you know. But regardless.
But all of these things are happening, and you're still hopping from thing to thing, looking for experience to experience. Meanwhile, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of figuring out what actually is going to propel you forward as a human being, other than I'm going to wait for this other thing to save my life.
The only one thing I ever knew that was a goal or gave me like hope or purpose or anything was performing. Ever since I was in kindergarten, 100%. That's the only one single true and honest thing I've ever seen or felt in my entire existence, hands down.
And so you join this band.
Well, before I joined, these songs are happening and they're saying, you know, say this and that, and I'm okay and I'm kind of mousy and I don't really know what's going on here, but I know and me that I can sing.
Yeah.
And so I think I've got to find a way to show these guys that I actually can do something. Because what this is with me not knowing what's happening, like I do way more than this.
Yeah.
So, you know, that little... there's this little vocal solo breakdown in a song called Who's Your Baby? And I said, I'm going for it. And so I just started belting. And then after it was done, it was quiet. And then there was kind of a, you know, nodding with each other. And then, okay, so then see you tomorrow for practice. And I was like, okay. And like went home and called my friend. I was like, I think I just joined a band. It wasn't even like, will you? Are you interested? It was like, I was just in it now. And so, yeah, that was the beginning of the craziest years to come, I suppose.
So let's move forward just a little bit on that, because there was a lot of stuff, you know, some of it worth mentioning, some of it not.
Yeah.
You know, as anything is, but let's move forward just, let's say, a couple of years. We'll go past some of the early experiences, and then a couple of years go by, and you are now the face of this band.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in this band with very different personalities. Everybody is different. And everyone has their own strange psychosis going on.
Yeah.
And none of us are dealing with our problems.
Not really.
But all of us connect on stage.
Yeah.
Was it weird to you that there were days where we legitimately would not speak to each other and then get on stage and rock the house, and then when we were done playing, go back to not speaking to each
other? That was very hard. That was really hard. And I think, you know, the connection that you share with people through music is a connection like you'll never experience with just like regular people or family members. There's just a different thing that there's not words for, because it's happening through the music. It's all based off of feeling with each other. And to know that, you know, if I had a really horrible day and I had a show to play, obviously there's moments when it's like, okay, you know, I don't really want to do this today or whatever. But for me, it was, oh my God, this is the worst day ever. I have got to get to this show now or I'm going to freak out.
Yeah.
Cause that was the one, that was what's going to save me. That was what I, that was where I could let whatever I was feeling out and just push it out of me, or it would be turned around. You know, I could sweat, I could sing, I could close my eyes and go somewhere else. I could laugh, you know, it just, whatever it was. And, that I would get there and feel these angers and separations and silences. And I'm going, what the hell? No, don't. No, I need this. I need this. Don't take this away from me. And then I would in turn get upset back. And it was a very weird thing to like knowingly and decide to come together and get on a stage in front of people with a group of people that are not speaking to each other.
Right.
And I don't know how we really
and are happy on stage.
And then
like
just switch
full
it.
Performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And just switch it. And either way, you know, there comes a time with performing when you have to realize that it's either about everyone, meeting maybe just the band or everyone in the room, which is ultimately the goal.
Yeah.
Or when you can blatantly see that you're not getting either of those things. And so you say, okay, well, this one's for me.
Right.
And you just close your eyes and you take what you need out of it. That's what I've always done anyways. And that makes whatever bullshit that was happening before or in between songs or after not matter. And, you know, I wasn't always the best at, you know, locking it in like that for myself. But I did know that I needed those experiences at the end of the day. And I've got to take what I can get out of it every single time I have it, because it's not guaranteed.
No, and nothing is.
No.
But when did you learn that?
When did I learn that? I mean, really probably, I think the first lesson was mostly just, you know, from high school to band, when I was like, I don't get to do this anymore. What am I going to do? And then making me just like really appreciate it that much more when it came back around again. Oh my God, I'm getting another chance, you know.
Did you find a way to transfer any of that to any other areas of your life?
Translate what?
Well, that idea that, you know, things are precious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I've also unfortunately experienced a lot of loss in my life with family members or friends passing away. And so that kind of stuff has always been in a perspective for me. I mean, we lost a pinnacle of our family on almost every single holiday throughout, you know, my adolescence and growing up. So it wasn't always just necessarily connected to music and just, you know, having value in things. I was also raised that way, you know, the value of a dollar, the value of a good conversation, the value of a good friend, things like that, you know. So I've always been pretty aware of how fast things can slip through your fingers or be taken away from you.
People tend to go one of two ways with that, though. Like, you either accept things for what they are, or you can try to strangle them close to you.
Oh, I definitely did that. Definitely did that.
And when did you figure out that that wasn't going to work? Did you figure out that that's not going to work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think I go back and forth to doing both. Like, when you love something so much, you just want to hold on to it with everything you got. But then you later in life find out that if you love it, let it go. If it comes back, that whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
So
it sounds like such trite bullshit when you hear it for the first mm-hmm. time. It's only when you really start to unpack it and almost meditate on the meaning of it, to really give it a chance to think that through, that you understand it at all.
Right.
And that's a hard lesson to come through.
Yeah. I think after having been so lucky and blessed to share a stage with incredible musicians and in my own band and perform in all these places for, 10 years and then have it stop, that was a real big realization for the importance of, or let's say, me losing entirely complete tolerance for another musician complaining about having to play a show, or bitching because no one was there,
yeah.
or being upset because their guitar didn't sound right. And I get so angry ever since, I that's what I wanted to do with my life. And I genuinely at that time felt that it was completely taken from me because I was still wanting to do it and there was no other reason why I couldn't, or, I had built everything to make sure that that's what I was doing. And then it kind of slowly fell away from me because everyone else, well, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to have this kid and I'm going to get married. And I didn't want to do any of those things. I just wanted to be right the hell where I was and keep running that forward. That was my plan my whole life.
Yeah.
So when those things stopped and I saw other people getting to do those things, I became very, very jaded and jealous and angry. How can you really, you're just going to cancel your show tonight? You ungrateful swine. I mean, that, and I still kind of feel that way sometimes. I mean, so much that even if I pay great money to see some giant act, I almost don't have a good time because I'm like, I'm so jealous that they're on the stage and I'm not.
Yeah.
And it's hard to just be an audience member sometimes, you know? So that really put a lot of perspective into things too about, having not taking your experiences for granted.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of emotion that I had to work through with that. But, as we kind of talk about the timeline of me, you reference and saying, when did you figure this out? Or when did you cope with that? And I really genuinely don't think that I've actually really sat down with me and dissected some of these things until this year. I mean, some of these answers I'm just now figuring out within the last few months. I think it has taken going through all of these things to need to figure it out.
Better late than never.
Mm-hmm. So, you figure things out, of course, throughout each experience, but we become a different person every day. So it's as I'm sitting here and talking about it, I feel like I'm a different person talking about other people and it's all just me.
Yes.
Yeah, so,
I get that completely.
It's like the person that's commenting on this right now is not the person that would be speaking for that situation, I'm happy to say that because we're supposed to be growing and changing. So if I am, then I'm doing something right, I guess.
But you're constantly doing most of these things on your own without mm-hmm. without any sort of professional guidance.
No.
It's not really coming from anywhere. So where do you go to get these new ideas?
There were a couple of just middle school counselors that I think actually cared and listened to me and didn't just treat me like a kid. And those things, some of those things that I learned through that,
they stuck with me. Therapy grenades went off now.
They just let me talk and they would actually listen to me as a person instead of just some, problem child.
Yeah.
Those things kind of stuck with me. So I've taken pieces of that and learning coping mechanisms with things like that. Basically having situations where I go completely off the deep end and make all the worst decisions and then, wake up the next morning realizing, well, we can't do that ever again. We cannot let that happen ever again. So then I start to try to figure out different ways to avoid those behaviors just because I don't want to feel that way anymore. So, I just kind of work through those things on my own. But although I tend to talk a lot, I found out at a young age that holding things in is very, very self-destructive for me. So I went 1,000% in the opposite direction and I overshare and overtalk and get everything. I'm still working on figuring out that balance, but I think a lot of, my self-therapy, so to speak, comes from speaking with my friends.
Yeah.
Just unleashing it all. And that becomes very tiresome for the people in my life that care about me. But it really is helpful. I really want to also be that person for those people as well.
Yeah.
I've said it for years. I'm a great listener when I stop talking. So, you know, I also can work through some of my own problems sometimes by hearing about yours or someone else's, because you identify with things or you're like, wow, I never thought of it like that. Or, oh my gosh, you know what? I felt that way and that makes sense now. And, you know, so I do a lot of communicating with people in my life. And I also like crazy shows like, you know, like Hoarders or My Strange Addiction, you know, Intervention.
Yeah, yeah.
But these
That'll teach you some things about yourself.
It really does, though. I mean, if it doesn't teach you something about yourself or even others around you, it just teaches you about the way the human mind thinks and
yeah.
what triggers mean and what coping means and what, you know, like exercises to prevent said nasty behaviors mean, like
yeah.
thinking of things like that. So I don't really read much. I take things from my surroundings and try to apply them to myself so that I can feel better, you know, because the one thing we know when we're in our bad place is that we don't want to feel like that. So you go through a ton of different ideas or practices to avoid those feelings, and you find out some work and that some really, really don't. So
have you always been open to change?
No.
Because that seems like it's fairly new.
Oh yeah. No, I hated change. I was really bad with it. I mean, like going back again to when I was 18 and my mom moved, that was like, your whole world is changing right now. And I went through it kicking and screaming. I hated it.
Yeah.
I really hated it. I wanted it to be that way that I wanted it to be, and that's it. But, you know, then there's, like, coping mechanisms and the fact that if I have my own apartment and I'm a little OCD about this cup sitting here just like this, at least that's something I can control. And when I come home, it'll be right there. It won't be changed unless I want to change it, you know?
Yeah.
So the little things like that that give me moments of release, I suppose.
Yeah.
I could straighten a rug for hours, let's just say, you know?
Yeah.
But that's learning what you can control and what you can't, I guess. It helps. I don't really know.
But that's not something that's innate in most people. It's gotta be learned. And granted, you are learning these things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always fascinating to me whenever I can talk to someone who's figured some of these things out, without really a whole lot of intervention from people saying, no, this is where you're holding yourself back, because you're telling yourself this is where you're holding yourself back.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires an incredible presence of mind.
Emotionally intelligent. Is that what you told me I was before?
Yeah.
I think with being an incredibly over emotional person, I don't really have a choice but to pay attention to them.
No, but you do.
That's exactly. I mean, I can't.
The choice is you can still scream at people and punch people in the face.
Oh,
and
I do that still sometimes.
Yeah, well, you know.
Not in the same way, I guess. But no,
yeah.
I mean, I still definitely have huge anger issues, but I learned that about myself a long time ago and realized, like, oh, now I know what they were saying when you were young, that you can't just do that.
Yeah.
You know, because as an adult, you actually see how it affects other people. It's not just affecting a quiet room of kids and, you know, this teacher's lesson plan. It's actually hurting people's feelings and ruining relationships and separating yourself from people you care about because you're acting like an asshole, you know. So it takes really bad, low situations for you to, like, reevaluate things. And like, I mean, there's two different kinds of people. There's people that are willing to do that and people that are just not.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times I'm not, but I do care enough that I don't want to keep repeating the same mistakes that make me and other people feel bad, you know? So what do I do to change this? And that word change comes up and then I'm like, I don't want to. And I get mad about it, and then I'm mad at that, and then I'm right back where I was. And it's just a constant cycle of, you know, going right back to my worst characteristics. But still ultimately realizing that I need to actively make that better. So, I mean, it's just that vicious cycle of being stuck in your brain and your emotions, I guess. But, I mean, you have a choice. You can either, you know, try to figure it out, or you can just sit in the same pile of shit every single day. And I do both. So I've never figured any of this out. I'm constantly trying to find a way to figure it out.
You know what? That's the right answer.
Yeah.
That's it right there.
Right.
Because it's always fluid. Mm-hmm. It's always changing. It's always in motion. There really is no figuring it out. There's only figuring it out right now.
I always say, you know, if you feel like you've figured it out, if you feel like you've already learned it and you already get it, you might as well just give up. If you think that you've already got it all, then what else is there to learn? What else is there to do? Who else is there to be? What else is there to see or experience or smell or taste? Nothing. So you already did it all. You're good, right? But you're still alive. And tomorrow's still going to happen. So what, are you just going to be like, yeah, no, I'm good on all of that. Been there, done that. You know, no, that's not. It's tomorrow's still going to happen, maybe. Yeah. You know, but today's
and if you're
still
lucky,
here.
You'll get a little bit of haven't been there, haven't done that. Let's go do that.
You will get that if you don't have the frame of mind that you've already capped off, you know, but you will rob yourself of those experiences if that's the perspective that you want to have on everything. So trying to find a way to stay open minded and realizing that being afraid of change, like fear, shouldn't be a reason for you to not do something. But it's scary. So, you know, we just don't sometimes.
Well, that's as good of advice as anything.
Thanks.
Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
And there you have it. Wasn't that an awesome conversation? I think maybe we need like a part two or something to really do a deep dive into all the stuff we didn't get to. This could have been 4 hours, but who wants that? You know what? I think I want that. If you want to get some more Char Molina in your life, and I know you do, you can find the links in the feed below. She's all over the place, making noises out of her head. People like it. And there's a song at the end of this show you're listening to right now. All you gotta do is not shut it off and you're gonna hear some singing. How great is that? I'll tell you what, that's not bad for the money, considering this costs you nothing. But I'm gonna stop talking now and we'll get to the song. But as always, don't kill yourselves out there.
Say the words, it's all the action of the verse.